There's crispy. And then there's crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy-er.
Welcome into College Football Live. There is just one uncommitted prospect in the top 10 in the ESPN 300, and you're looking at him, Darnell Wright, number 5 overall, only uncommitted 5-star prospect, number 3 offensive tackle. He will make his announcements live with us right here on College Football Live. What impact may he have on these rankings? You look at the top 10, Alabama 24, ESPN 300 signees. That breaks their old record, followed by Georgia and Texas A&M, Oklahoma and Texas. You switch over to 4 o'clock. Not a lot of changes there. As we scroll down, LSU with a nice get. We saw Smell Softser head to Alabama out of LSU, but they do get the in-state Devontae Lee in our earlier coverage over on ESPNU and ESPN2. Welcome in, ESPN2 College Football Live. Matt Schick, Trevor Maddich, Jim Moore, and National Recruiting Director Tom Luganbill. Another hour to go here, 3.5 hours into our coverage. What did we learn here about the early signing period and the late signing period?
We learned that it's been a success so far. I think that's the big thing that I would point to and feel like the one thing I'm looking forward to as we continue to track this is some of the volatility that we experienced with coaching changes in the month of January after the first signing period that we didn't have as much of the first go around. Will that give kids pause to say, well, maybe I want to run the risk here and take a step back? I don't know if it will, but we saw a lot of changing going on in January. And kids, as we all know, they commit and sign to a person and not a program, and that can be dangerous.
It can be very dangerous, especially with as much movement as we're seeing late now with coaches.
Yeah.
You know, what I took away from today, this is what I found interesting so far is Dabo and Nick talking about how important character is to them. You know, we focus so much on talent. Mm-hmm. And coming from an NFL background, you know, there was always the talent aspect, and then there was always the aspect of character and how did you value character. And it's good to see that those two teams that are the two dominant teams in college football are putting a real emphasis on character. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, and to me, what stood out is how many top recruits left the state of California.
Oh, man.
For goodness, there's so much opportunity to play early some of the marquee schools on the West Coast, especially a place like USC, especially if you're a big guy. And the fact that so many are leaving right now, I think, leaves the Pac-12 in a position of being a bit of a developmental league now because they're losing the quantity of top talent. They've got to develop the guys that they do get better.
Sure.
Than the teams that are getting the top talent out of their own state.
As a guy who coached in the Pac-12, you buying that?
I absolutely buy it. I think Trevor is right on point, and especially with the big men. You're talking about there's not a lot of big men out west, and now they're not getting the big men. And, you know, you can't play football unless you can win in the trenches. And the Pac-12 is in real trouble. And then seeing some of the Polynesian kids now that have typically gone to USC or Washington or Utah or UCLA, and now they're going to Tennessee, and they're going to Notre Dame, and they're going to Alabama. That's very concerning if I'm the Pac-12.
You mentioned Henry To'oto'o, who earlier on our coverage from De La Salle High School in California announced his intentions to sign with Tennessee. Tennessee is on the short list for our next announcement and the final one of the day. Darnell Wright, the lone remaining uncommitted top 10 player, Luganbill.
Well, and as with most offensive linemen, the technical side is going to come through maturity and development, but this is a big, quick twitch kid that's got great feet, balance, and agility. Can be a bit of a waistbender at time, which many kids at his height at the high school level will have a tendency to do, but you can see he can roll his hips. He's got some power. He's got a good base. And what I like about him is he can adjust to moving targets downfield because he's so athletic.
Yeah, we talk about being a waistbender. That works in high school when you're that big and powerful. At the next level, you will learn not to do that.
Yeah, that's right.
You'll eat a lot of dirt.
You will fall right on your face quick.
I know coming out of high school, I was an offensive lineman center. I was great at chopping down middle linebackers.
Yeah.
And I could get out there and knock them down. I got to college, think I'd do the same thing. And Kyle Whittingham was the middle linebacker of BYU. Now he's the head coach of Utah. He taught me the flavor of pain. And I tried to cut him. Just bam! bam! So he'll learn how to stand there to squat down.
Better. And he'll learn it at one of these four schools, Alabama, West Virginia, North Carolina, or Tennessee. We go to West Virginia, Huntington High School in Huntington, West Virginia, for Darnell Wright and his announcement. You wait until the late signing period. The wait is nearly over. You can end it right now. Darnell, appreciate the time here, sharing this moment with us. What's it going to be?
I'm going to be continuing my academic and football career at the University of...
Got to make some room for the hair there with the extended Velcro, Darnell Wright. Okay, so you picked Tennessee, obviously leaving the state. Why the Vols?
I just felt as though it was a good fit for me, not just through football, but through everything academically. I had a good relationship with all the coaches. All the people, they treated me well, and they treated me as a real person.
I know you visited Tennessee last weekend. What was it about the visit that stood out to you?
It was just the family feeling of going there. Everybody there is kind of, they're welcoming. I don't know if it's a Southern thing, but that's just how it is and how it was. And just felt comfortable.
You're an Under Armour All-American, and that week you spent some time there with Wanye Morris, who's another five-star offensive tackle. He's at Tennessee right now. What were those conversations like about joining forces with him on that offensive line at Tennessee?
Wanye's the homie. We don't really talk about much in terms to playing together. We just kind of kick it as homies, so I don't know.
Well, you're going to be kicking it as homies there in Tennessee. Darnell, appreciate the time, and congratulations. Thanks for sharing it with us.
Yes, sir.
It's Darnell Wright, who is headed to Tennessee. And you look at the class, there is Wanye Morris. So you got two of the top five offensive tackles in the class, Wright and Morris, joining a class that could certainly be a great foundation for Jeremy Pruitt, Tom.
And when you're building it from the inside out, as we've talked about all day long, that's where it starts. That's where your foundation is. Now, I'm gonna bring something up, and it's going to be a sore spot for Tennessee fans, because we've been here before with really prominent, talented Tennessee classes.
Trey Smith.
And Butch Jones elevated the program. All right, he got the program better than it was when he took over. But the large criticism of that program was player development. Did the players, when they arrived, get better and maximize their ability to produce and win? And for Jeremy Pruitt, he's early in the process here. He's getting good players. Now that next step of the evolution comes, and that's player development.
Well, I think if he applies the lessons that he learned from Nick,
no question,
then we're going to see tremendous player development. Yeah. I'll tell you what I thought was interesting about that that interview right there, or his announcement, is how important the last official visit.
Oh, yeah.
And how important the last in-home visit can be. You're always trying to get yourself in position to be the last guy in the house. You know, I mean, you might go in the last day that you're allowed at 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock at night just so you can have the final word. You're always trying to get yourself in position to get that last final visit so you have the last impression on the kid and his family.
You would hope that kids would make decisions based on logic, but it's sales, and sales are emotional.
Yeah.
And I think that last visit allows that one last spin of the emotional wheel to gin that up a little bit.
Oh, yeah, and because then what you don't have off of it is the decompression period. Mm-hmm. You know, every kid comes off of their visit, and they're all excited, and then two or three days later kind of wears off, and they're on to the next one.
You're right.
You don't have it this time. Yeah. Now you're signing.
You know, right. Going back to your development, I'll tell you, if they can take the third and the fifth ranked offensive tackles in this class and get them developed, I mean, you know how important it is.
Oh, yeah?
The edges. Take care of the quarterback. Run the football.
The Tennessee fans are really touchy about that because of, let me give you two words, Alvin Kamara. Hardly used as running back at Tennessee. All he does is go to the New Orleans Saints, and his first year in the NFL was the offensive rookie of the year there. And then Cordell Patterson couldn't quite get everything straightened out. Tennessee couldn't get him straightened out. Wasn't much of a factor there. We just saw him in the Super Bowl. Tom Brady thinks he's pretty good.
But we've got a regime change. I think you have to give Coach Pruitt a chance. And I think he'll do it. I mean, I think we're seeing the signs of it.
If they've had five top 10 recruits now signed with Tennessee in the ESPN 300, Aaron. How about two of them right here in this class? Again, what kind of statement is Jeremy Pruitt making here with this class, Tom?
That Tennessee and the approach, their resources to get the job done, they are a strong enough program and they are perceived to be a strong enough program to go into other people's backyards and get players, because you can't make an 85-man scholarship roster out of your own state in Tennessee. You are forced to go and compete with your contenders in their backyard.
They get Henry Toto out of De La Salle out west in California. They get Darnell Wright out of West Virginia, and putting together a top 15 class. Up next here on College Football Live, well, his biggest recruit wasn't out of high school, but from Alabama. We'll ask Oklahoma head coach Lincoln Riley about Jalen Hurts and this 2019 class. There's some concerns maybe in some other schools. Look, Ryan Day, first recruiting class, not ranked as highly as we typically see, but the same for USC. What's the future hold out west? And Clemson and Alabama, they're closing the gap. Is any program closing the gap with these two teams? It's College Football Live.
Intensity on three. One, two, three.
Intensity.
Let's go. Get it going.
Everybody says there's no I in team. I say there is an I in win. Because the individuals make the team what it is. So you better get the right kind of individuals on your team, and then that's going to help you be successful. You're not only evaluating a player whether he can play or not, you have to evaluate him based on his value. Not only from a physical standpoint, but also from a character, attitude, intelligence. We're not going by scout.com or Rivals or any of those people. We actually evaluate players just like we would draft them. So we know that we're getting the kind of player that we want for the specific positions that fit the criteria for what we want.
College Football Live is brought to you by Heineken. Enjoy Heineken responsibly. And K Jewelers, for all the moments, for love, forever.
It has been a fascinating past 6 months there at Ohio State, specifically with Urban Meyer. Of course, you had the Zach Smith allegations and situation back in the summer. Urban Meyer eventually placed on administrative leave and eventually suspended for a few games. And then in December announced he would retire after the Rose Bowl. Ryan Day named as his replacement. Then just a month ago, Justin Fields transfers to Ohio State. The former Georgia quarterback today on his new head coach, Ryan Day, and the possible immediate eligibility.
I don't really know much about this process. I mean, so all that lawyer stuff, I'd rather not have to deal with it. But, I mean, doing what I have to do to, I guess, get eligible. But my main focus is just the team and this upcoming season. Coach Meyer, he hasn't really been around that much, but I can tell that he's going to affect the program even though he's not on the coaching staff. So just having him here just as a mentor probably definitely affect my future. Coach Day's a great coach. We kind of had a relationship in high school, but they had a commit at the time when I was kind of getting recruited by them. So I didn't really have great contact. He's smart, as I can see already. I mean, I've met with him on some plays already, and I can already tell he's a great offensive-minded coach.
Look at what the shoes that Urban Meyer is leaving behind to fill by Ryan Day. Look at those class rankings since 2012, 6th, 3rd, 7th, 6th, 5th, 2nd, and 2nd in those ESPN 300 commits. It may have been a rocky last 6 months for Urban Meyer, but the ride he took Ohio State on was impressive thanks to his recruiting efforts. Here's my friend Matt Schick to explain. Ohio State has always been a national brand, but Urban Meyer took it to another level. In the ESPN 300 era, so beginning in 2006, under Jim Tressel, Ohio State had an average class rank outside the top 10. Starting in 2011, when Urban Meyer took over, Ohio State's average class ranking was inside the top five, with a top seven class in every one of his seasons in Columbus. Meyer also signed a total of 93 prospects from the ESPN 300. That's the second most in that span behind Nick Saban. Urban Meyer, of course, spent some time in Florida as a head coach, and he spent some time there recruiting for Ohio State, signing 20 players from the Sunshine State. That was the second most recruited state for the Buckeyes behind Ohio. In fact, in Meyer's last three classes, Ohio State signed more top 50 prospects from the state of Florida than any other team signed during that span. Yes, even more than the teams who actually play in the state of Florida. But the lasting imprint of Urban Meyer's recruiting efforts can be found in the 2013 class, a class that included six eventual first-round NFL draft picks. It was that class that helped lead the Buckeyes to the 2014 National Championship. Safe to say that when it comes to Urban Meyer's recruiting footprint, Ryan Day has some big shoes to fill.
And again, is there cause for alarm? Well, they're 16th in the ESPN class rankings, eight ESPN 300 recruits in this class. They've had three players in the top 100 of either the 2019 300 or the 2020 300 decommit since Urban Meyer's retirement announcement. That stuff is going to happen. But Tom, you see that number 16 next to him. Oh my goodness, they're usually top 10. Yeah. And folks may say, well, the knee jerk is, it must be Ryan Day. It's not that simple here. Might be a numbers issue?
Well, certainly it is. It's quality versus quantity, and you only have the available number of scholarships to give out that your roster tells you you have. And what people have got to understand, that's a good thing if you're Ohio State. They got good players. That means the bulk of them are coming back. If you're concerned about Ohio State right now, you've obviously got to be concerned about quarterback depth and inexperience under center. Those are areas that still need to be addressed. Obviously, the Justin Fields situation will manifest itself here shortly, but I really like the job, particularly in the offensive line, particularly on the defensive front, that Ohio State has done here. And, Coach, we talked about this earlier in the day. When you know you have limited numbers, you're going to scrutinize even more heavily because you can't afford to miss.
You can't miss on anybody.
Right.
And you've got to make sure that you balance out your roster. And I think when people get so caught up in these rankings, and it's fun to do,
sure,
we love doing it, but they have to take into account what you said, and that is how many scholarships did we have available, mm-hmm. and how did we fill them? Did we fill those 17 or 18 or 15 spots with quality players that are going to help our program be a champion? Or did we just take some guys or get some guys? And obviously they've done a nice job of filling their program in this class with quality players, just not a lot of them, and that's a good thing.
Yeah.
And one of the ways that you don't miss is for the coaches to lean on the current players as they host the recruits.
Sure.
Those players aren't just showing the recruits a good time. Those guys are seeing if those recruits might be a good fit here. Ohio State has a very defined culture of accountability and of leadership. And if a high school recruit comes in and the current players don't think he'd fit that very well, they wouldn't respond to the leadership that's currently in the locker room. They'll go back and tell the head coach, hey, this guy probably isn't one of our guys, and that will help them to not miss on somebody.
I got that a lot. I'd set guys that we were very specific, and I think all coaches are very specific with who they host, who they have as a host for a particular recruit. And I would have a download with my guys on Sunday. Okay, tell me about him. How was Friday night? How was he Saturday when you spent time with him? What was he like when he was away from his parents? Was he the same guy that we saw at dinner when he was at the fraternity party at 11 o'clock at night? And oftentimes, like you just said, Trevor, they'd come back and they'd say, hey, we got to get this guy. But there were many, many times when they'd say, hey, coach, he's not our kind of guy. We got to move on from him. We don't want him here. And they wouldn't necessarily get into specifics. But if you pick the right host and you trusted him and they told you that, then you better put some stock in it.
Now, the flip side of that for coaches is that they're also saying the same thing about the coach to the recruit.
Absolutely.
Right? And if they don't like the coach very much, they'll tell the recruit, hey, look.
You don't want to come here, man.
This guy is, this is different from what he's saying, right?
Or if that player's direct competition to his playing time, they may, hey.
Yeah. Oh, see, now you're getting Machiavelli.
Yeah, you want to go like deeper? That. I'll go deeper with
That's
you.
Good stuff right there.
Everyone's got a reason to say what they are saying. So, be interesting to see what happens with Ohio State, with Ryan Day. It's going to be real fascinating to watch what happens with USC. Remember, Clay Helton announced as being retained by Athletic Director Lynn Swan. He's given an extension, new contract back in February of last year. Cliff Kingsbury named the new OC. Had a sandwich there out west and left for the Arizona Cardinals. And then in that time, Brew McCoy, who had actually enrolled and was on campus
After Kingsbury left, he left, packed his bags and went to Texas, who was his other finalist there. Aside from SC, then you have Graham Harrell, named the new offensive coordinator. Concern level at SC, given everything that's happened over the last couple of months and the subpar season, missing a bowl game, is what?
I'm not too worried about it.
Really?
Yeah, I think Clay Helton is actually doing a better job than he gets credit for. His first full year as a head coach there, he won the Rose Bowl. His second full year, he won the Pac-12. Now, last year, they fell off a bit. But I think they're in position right now to do the best they can with the players that are available to them. They're not getting a lot of big guys. Nobody on the West Coast is. They're getting some, not a lot. But he's got tremendous skill guys. And I think bringing in Cliff Kingsbury in the air raid offense was a smart move by him. And when Kingsbury left, he picked another guy from the Mike Leach air raid tree, Graham Harrell, to come in. Those are the kinds of guys that maximize skill guys when you don't have enough big guys to pound people. And I think they're heading in a good direction based on their resources available.
I agree that I think Clay's done a really nice job. I think he's a good football coach. I think they maybe have some discipline and toughness issues, but the pressure is certainly on, as we know. And you hit it right on the head, the big guys. Their offensive line is basically decimated. They lost their entire secondary. And I think some of the optics, the hits he's taken, you know, in the public relations with Brew leaving and things like that are probably less profound than you know, they really are, or being perceived as more profound than they really are. So, but I'll tell you what, the West Coast has an issue right now. I mean, you just can't ignore it. They got an issue. They got a big man issue. They've got an issue now with a lot, and the Polynesian kids that the Utahs, the USCs, the Washington depended on for the big guys that are now leaving the area or leaving Hawaii or wherever they come from and going down south. You got some real problems in the Pac-12.
And some of that has to do with the player pool. Look, we could talk all day long about the population in California. Yes, one of the more populous states in this
country. But it's not a football playing population.
But it's not about necessarily football. And look at this. California tackle football participation. Look how that's dropped, Tom, over the last 5 years.
Well, you've got 12 teams all having to put their fishing pole in the same state. And certainly there's going to be tremendous skill out west. And you don't have the bodies, as Coach is talking about, in terms of the front people to be a dominant team in the trenches. And what have we seen the common denominator be of the teams that are winning in the semifinal of the college football playoff and ultimately winning the national championship? They are dominant football teams with depth up front on both sides of the ball.
On one of my off-season tours, Tom Herman of Texas told me that he's never heard a coach that won the national championship, when asked how he did it, say, "We out-finessed them."
Yeah.
Right? But here's the problem. You've got to fight the fight you're in.
Sure.
And the fight that the Pac-12 is in right now is not one that they're going to win nationally by getting that big guy problem solved right now.
Yeah.
What they've got to do is win their own conference right now. And then they've got to be able to have enough little guys. Become Oklahoma first. You want to become Alabama and Georgia, fine. But first be Oklahoma. We're not going to overpower them in the trenches necessarily. But, boy, we can get a quarterback and a bunch of receivers that you can't catch. That's the fight they're in today.
Yeah, I agree.
It used to be, like we talked about earlier today in our coverage, SC, they want a guy, they get a guy. Now these guys from in-state
perception
are leaving
changed.
The state. Yeah.
I think perception and optics is the term you use, Coach. It's different now than it ever was before on the West Coast. And talking to other coaches at other places in the Pac-12 and to hear them say, "Hey, listen, you know, we beat UCLA on 3 kids this year," or, you know, "we beat SC on a kid." That doesn't happen. And that's the concern you talk about. That's a problem.
No, that's a problem. And then, listen, if you're a big-time football player, you want to go big-time program. USC is or was or will be, again, a big-time program. But you also want to play in a great environment. All right? Well, you walk into the Coliseum, mm-hmm. and it's half empty.
Yeah.
It's half empty. You walk into the Rose Bowl, and there's 35,000 people in a 92,000-seat stadium. If you're a big – you go, and then you go down to Georgia,
and
they have 93,000 for their spring game. And Alabama consistently has over 80,000 people for their spring game, okay? And you can't even get 40,000 in the Rose Bowl for a Pac-12 game.
So what do? The solution is you have to win. The first thing you have to win is your conference. And I think what they've got to do, I think that Helton was really smart to go full air raid on offense and maximize his greatest strength.
Because of the conference.
Quarterbacks and receivers and good running backs.
While he hopefully builds up more toughness in the
defense. He'll spread it out with the air raid.
Yeah.
He'll take away, you know, the issues are offensive line, okay? So you can mask that a little bit with this offense. Get the ball out quick with JT, and he's got a bunch of good receivers.
And by the way, to make it worse, they've got the Chargers and the Super Bowl Rams in town now.
And LeBron.
Competing for eyeballs, yeah.
Yeah.
You mentioned for SC, if you want to be Alabama, be Oklahoma first. Well, Oklahoma is something good to emulate as they have made back-to-back college football playoff appearances. The head coach, Lincoln Riley, will join us following three straight top 10 classes.
Deep in the panhandle of Texas lies the town of Muleshoe. A short drive through the town and you're likely to be greeted by Old Pete, a memorial erected in honor of the half-breed animal that helped pioneer this great country. Nowadays, the legend of Old Pete is outshined by the town's newest celebrity, Lincoln Riley, from Muleshoe, Texas.
One of the many men of talent who have come to Oklahoma, including their latest signing class, which you could say includes quarterback Jalen Hurts, who transfers from Alabama in mid-January. Fourth in the ESPN class 2019 rankings, got 11 players from the ESPN 300 in this class, stringing together another top five class, three straight top tens, back-to-back college football playoff appearances, back-to-back Heisman Trophy winners, and the head coach responsible for much of that is Lincoln Riley, joins us now. Let's start, Lincoln, with this recruiting class headlined by Jaden Hazelwood, number one wide receiver. What do you like about him and this class as a whole?
Excited to get Jaden. Excited really for that entire receiver, portion of the class. I thought that was a really strong point, as was our defensive line group. If you were to highlight two groups, I think that really stood out. Those would be the ones. But yeah, we feel like the group as a whole is a championship level class. I mean, it started with some great players that jumped on board early, and we continue to get more, great, unselfish players that wanted to come win championships together, and really grew into a tremendous class, and a class that we think is going to, continue to bring championships to this university, continue to make us a better football program. So I think it was a great class, and we've got to continue to stack these on top of each other. We've been able to do it the last few years, and that certainly made a difference.
The recruit that drew the most headlines was Jalen Hurts as a grad transfer. What does his addition mean to your team?
Yeah, it's great to have him. He's a mature guy. He's been through a lot in his career. Felt like he brought some important experience to that room that we needed, and it's going to be a great competition. Excited to throw him in there with a very young, talented Tanner Mordecai and another young, talented guy in Spencer Rattler. Spencer will get here in June, and we'll let those guys battle it out. But I think to be a championship team, you got to have a great quarterback room. You got to have competition. You got to have guys that push each other. You got to have depth, and I feel like we have that in that room.
I want to ask you about the quarterback that they're trying to replace, and that is Kyler Murray, who just won the Heisman Trophy. I'm not sure what kind of conversations you've had with him recently. He's obviously got a big decision to make, projected as a first-round pick in the NFL. It seemed during the season it was, all right, this is it for football, and then we're going to baseball, but then he just so happened to win the Heisman. What do you think he's going to do?
Well, I know what he's going to do, but I'm not. I'm going to let Kyler let him have his moment. But I'm excited for him. I mean, I'm thrilled for his opportunity. I think both myself and Coach Skip Johnson, our baseball coach here, when this started, I think we, both wanted to, put the kid in a position, from our standpoint where he could, excel at both. He certainly had the talent to do it and hopefully put himself in a position where he could have a chance to play both professionally and have that opportunity and that option. And he's, give the kid credit, man. He's done a lot, did a lot for this university, done a lot in a short time, and he's put himself in a great position where I think he could go be a fantastic player, either in the major leagues or in the NFL. So he's a rare talent. Was a blast to coach, and I know he's going to be a lot of fun to watch regardless of what he decides to do.
Coach, there's been a lot of talk about you going to the NFL, but what's more interesting to me is how the NFL comes to you, how coaches visit Norman in the offseason to learn about your offense. How would you describe the effect of college offenses on the NFL?
Well, it's growing. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I think our rules, as far as our access to players, especially in the off season, has really, come much closer together than it's ever been. I think you've had a few guys in the NFL that have tried it, that have decided to go all in with it and have had, fantastic results. And I think more than now you see that, that teams are just more open to different ideas and not stuck kind of in a bubble of just only running, you know, one or two certain kinds of systems. So I think creativity's up, and I think that's what these players coming out of high school and college are used to, and they're able to get results even quicker. And that's what people want. So, you know, we've been lucky. We've done some good things here. We haven't reinvented the wheel, but we've had a good system here. We've had good coaches. We've had good players and a great setup. And so, yeah, it's been fun to be able to catch up with these guys. And I think it's certainly great for, you know, our players here to know that, you know, that's another advantage you get to coming to a place like this is I think it does absolutely help get you ready, you know, if and when you get that opportunity to make that step to the NFL.
Lincoln, really appreciate the time. Congrats on a great year and as well as the recruiting class. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me.
Lincoln Riley, head coach of the Oklahoma Sooners. And again, where there's an Oklahoma, there's a Texas in the Big 12. You look at those class ranks, ESPN 300 prospects, the 4 and 5 stars. It's a back-to-back years now, both teams ranked in the top 10 in the recruiting class rankings. You know, when these guys became head coaches, Tom Herman and Lincoln Riley, it'd be fascinating to watch these guys compete on the field, compete in recruiting. Does the Big 12 still, though, run through Norman, Oklahoma?
As of right now, it does. I mean, when you consider the track record that they've had, the explosiveness of the offense, is the supreme quarterback play across the board, they've probably done a better job of overcoming below-average defensive play than maybe any other team in college football. And I think that Lincoln Riley and the staff, they realize that just a couple other pieces, just so we can get to the point where maybe we give up two fewer explosive plays a game. Maybe we get one more defensive stop a game. Well, how do you do that? You go out and you continue to improve on defense. Some of their best players last year on defense were true freshmen. Ronnie Perkins is going to be a really good player. Their safety, Bradley Hiles, I'm forgetting his whole last name, hyphenated name, true freshman, played a lot of football for them. They're getting better young players on defense. You do that with that offense, now you've really got a chance to be something special.
It's hard to play defense
in that conference.
Oh, my goodness. Oh. To be a defensive coordinator in that conference, you're pulling your hair out every week.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny you say that because one of the better teams on defense, and the other coaches across the conference say it, is Iowa State. When you sit there and you say, well, why? Well, when you watch Iowa State on defense, they do two things. They tackle in space, and they don't give up the play over the top. You do that in that conference, you're going to give yourself a chance every week.
Yep. Make the other team make mistakes.
Yeah.
You know, but tackling will never go out of vogue when you're playing you're playing good defense.
So the narrative coming off of the bowl game for Texas was they're back, and that was orchestrated by Sam Ellinger, who said that into the microphone after the game. We're back. You look at their class rankings, back-to-back classes in the top 10.
Yeah.
Is it fair to say that they're back?
No. They won't be back until they win the Big 12. But they are certainly on the way, and physically manhandling Georgia in the bowl game this year raises expectations. But that's good because it also raises belief. I talked to Tom Herman about that belief with his program. He said when he first got there, his team was compliant. That means they did what they were told to do because they were told it. He said this last year, they were more committed, where they did what they were supposed to do because it was the right thing to do. Well, now they've got evidence in the bank that being committed to his culture and his system will bring them wins like that win over Oklahoma in the regular season and that brutalization of Georgia in the bowl game. And I think Texas right now is running on that momentum.
And you look at the states where they're getting them from. Only 31% of this class is from within the state. Arizona, California, Florida, Louisiana.
Casting a wide net. And I think if they felt there wasn't that type of blend between the best player and the right player in state, you're battling with Texas A&M. You are a brand like Texas. You can go into some other people's backyards and pull some good players.
You know, I think it's interesting, though, in the recruiting battles, I noted that when you guys interviewed Jimbo Fisher, the Texas A&M coach, earlier today, he made a point to say Texas has the best high school players and the best high school coaches.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think that's got to be some sort of a reference to the fact that Texas went out of state a lot this year. He said, hey, guys, I think you're great.
I like you.
That's just a great little jab.
Yeah. Well, Texas can go out of state and they can get players because, number one, the school, and then number two, Austin. I can tell you for a fact that California kids are not resistant to going to Austin,
sure.
Texas.
Yeah.
Kids from Arizona and Nevada are not resistant to going to Austin, Texas. I mean, it's a great place to live and it's a great place to go to school. But I still think this, that eventually they have to attack Texas with a fervor and they have to beat Texas A&M in Texas for the top kids.
Sure.
They can't rely on going out of state forever. But as they continue to win, And I think that that'll be a residual effect as well.
He's got Brew McCoy, who committed, enrolled at SC. Now he's at Texas.
Brew McCoy going to be one of the top rush-ins in college football.
He just doesn't know it yet.
He doesn't know it, but he's going to be a great defensive end.
About offense, might want to go on the defensive side. He is headed to Texas. We are headed near the home stretch of our signing day coverage. Who's closing the gap on Bama and Clemson when it comes to recruiting? We're going to hear from Nick Saban and Dabo Swinney on College Football Live.
A lot of y'all might understand this, but if you want to cut for any of them recruits out there, if you want to come to a program where you got to worry about your coach, all up in the locker room, dancing, come to Death Valley.
Reese Davis was not going to give up that microphone. He knows what he's doing there. Alabama and Clemson, both the top 10 classes here. And again, more ESPN 300 commits in 2019 for Alabama than Clemson. A lot of that's just simply a numbers game. But both of these programs certainly at the top, thanks to their head coaches, Nick Saban and Dabo Swinney, who I talked to earlier today on our signing day coverage about these classes and their recruiting philosophies. How do you find and decipher who are not only the talented kids, but the kids that are willing to put in the work knowing it's not going to be handed to them?
Yeah, we recruit people first. That's the first and foremost thing I would say. And I hire people first, coaches second, and we recruit players second. We really, I think, do as good a job as anybody in the country at evaluating. We've never signed the number one recruiting class in the country and probably never will. We've been pretty much in that top 15 year, I think 9 years in a row. But I think we evaluate as good as anybody, and especially guys that fit the culture here, because this is not an easy place. This is not a place of entitlement. This is not a place where you can come in and think that there's a shortcut.
How do you evaluate? What is your recruiting philosophy that allows you to get these types of players every year?
Well, I think our coaches, first of all, do a really good job of evaluating. I try to look at every player. We kind of try to do it like the NFL draft, and we have critical factors for every position, size and speed, as well as character and intelligence, and we try to evaluate all three of those areas and decide if that player is a good fit for us. And we feel very fortunate that we've been able to get some really good players here, and I think this class is very good as well.
That's safe to assume. Since the start of 2015, Clemson and Alabama have won 55 of their 59 games, and a couple of those losses are to each other. Two national titles apiece, which can only mean we're set for round five coming up in December and January. Welcome back in. Jim Mora, Tom Luganville, Tom Van Heren. How have these two programs, we see the numbers, we see the rankings, take us inside. How have they done it?
Well, something that Dabo Swinney said, some of it is coach speak, but I think he's telling the truth in how they're not going to be ranked with the top kid. They're not going to be ranked at number one overall. Their strategy is different. The way that they recruit, if you look at the number of offers that Clemson puts out compared to other programs, it's way less.
Oh, yeah.
Way less than other programs. And I think, for me, the big difference with these two schools, guys, Alabama, Clemson, it's defense. Alabama is always producing top defensive linemen. And then you go and look at this class, 8 ESPN 300 defensive linemen in the 2019 class.
Right.
Clemson, last year, 2 five-star defensive linemen. They bring in Tyler Davis, a defensive tackle here, too. So, for me, that's where they're separating themselves. I know Alabama has a record number of ESPN 300 commitments. But on the defensive side, that's where it starts.
Well, they separate themselves at two positions, along the front and then on the perimeter at corner. With tall, long kids that can match up with today's bigger, more physical wideout, and then in the offensive line. I mean, these two teams are physical. They'll get after you. They'll line up and run it. And then you couple that with superior quarterback play. I don't know if Clemson gets enough credit. It's hard to hit on a quarterback, okay? It's hard to be right on a quarterback. They've done it 3 in a row. And you can make an argument, maybe 4 in a row, if Hunter Johnson ends up being a really good player for Northwestern over the next 2 years. That's hard to do. And you talk about building a program. Well, if you hit on quarterbacks, you're well on your way.
And that goes into the strategy of not offering as many guys, because their evaluation process is way more stringent than just let's offer this guy, let's offer this
just
guy.
To be in on it.
Right.
Well, they have the pick of the litter,
yeah.
First of all. I mean, everybody, I shouldn't say everybody, people want to go there and play for those guys in those programs. And to me, the thing that can't be overvalued is their emphasis on the person, not necessarily just the player. I mean, you have to have talent to win. You have to have talent to win. But it's the intangibles of the person that create the perpetual success. It's the intangibles that allow you to overcome adversity, that take a guy that's not entitled,
right?
All right, that's been highly recruited, still doesn't have a feeling of entitlement. Says I have to work my tail off to get to that starting job. I'm not deserving of it unless I earn it. And not everybody feels that way. And they get those types of guys, and it's the intangible talent, of course.
Sure.
We all see talent.
Mm-hmm.
We can all see talent. We can time them. We can, you know, see how high they jump.
Yeah.
We can watch them tackle. Can they catch? But you have to break down the intangibles. What are those important intangibles that are going to create a winner? And they do a great job of finding those guys.
Mental toughness, competitive temperament, aptitude, the ability to process.
Selflessness.
Are you a good teammate?
Competitive greatness.
Team chemistry.
Accountability.
Can you imagine how
toughness.
Accountability. Absolutely.
Well, you know, everyone says toughness.
Competing.
Is he tough? Toughness is more than just that.
Yeah.
Toughness is mental and emotional toughness. Can I handle my workload in school,
yep.
Take a chemistry test on Friday, and go up against Auburn on Saturday? That's mental toughness.
And then be at a 5 a.m. workout the next Monday.
That's right, with a coach in your grill.
Yeah.
And I think a part of that now, too, with all these transfers, is bringing in guys, like you mentioned, the right character, but the right mindset to know that I'm going to be sitting behind first-round talent.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I better compete or I'm not going to see the field.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Alabama, number one yet again in the class rankings, and obviously the SEC footprint has a big part of that. Most of the ESPN 300 prospects, more than 50%, more than 60%, are located in that footprint. Florida is a big part of that, not only with Florida, but with Miami, with Florida State. What is the state of Florida when it comes to recruiting and the college football teams that call that state home? It's next. Recruiting class rankings, again, as of the 4 o'clock Eastern hour, you can see Bama, Georgia, Texas A&M. How about Florida with a top 10 class? Dan Mullen putting that together. You scroll down. How about the other Florida schools? Florida State, sitting at 18. They're so accustomed to those top 10, top 5 classes, falling on some hard times. Where's Miami? Where is Miami with new head coach Manny Diaz? There they are, sitting, cracking the top 30. You look at the state of Florida, and specifically Florida State and the Gators. Look at their 2018 season. On the field, very different. Postseason, obviously Florida State did not play the first time since 1981 without qualifying for a bowl game. And those recruiting class rankings separated by 8 slots. So you look at that and you say these teams heading in opposite directions. Let's start on the good side here with the Florida Gators and Dan Mullen. The perception fair that he is now running the state of Florida, at least has the edge in terms of in-state recruiting?
Well, in terms of on-the-field success and then how that's transitioned into recruiting in a short window, yes. I think it's fair to say. I can remember going back in the fall and just hearing some of the concerns of Florida fans in relationship to the type of player that was committed to them at the time. And my immediate response was, let's take a step back here and realize that when Dan Mullen was at Mississippi State, you're coaching at a developmental program where you're going to bring guys in, you identify them, you're going to have to project a little bit, you redshirt them, and you developed them, and you created this terrific program. So if you're concerned at Florida, don't you want to put your stock in a coach that has proven that he can identify and develop talent and turn your football team into a winner? I think that Florida's on their way to doing that. They had huge needs in the defensive secondary. They identified it with two corners. Big needs along the defensive front, identified that as well. And they addressed themselves in the offensive line. This is what Dan Mullen was hired to do.
Now, very quickly, he created a real sense of optimism there.
Yes.
It was a very pessimistic environment for a long time.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I mean, there's an energy there. And an optimism that it's infectious and recruits feel it.
Sure.
Their families feel it and they go, hey, I want to be a part of that. You know, I want to be a part of growing this thing. You know, I want to be a part of making Florida special again.
That's why the first year is so important. I mean, maybe in recruiting you might have to, you know, eat some recruits you don't necessarily want, or you're just trying to cobble it together. But on the field, you got to perform. And right, Florida has that momentum right now. Florida State, on the other hand, with Willie Taggart outside the top 15, no quarterback recruit in this class or last year's class, DeAndre Francois transfers. What's the state of Florida State?
Well, right now, they've got a recruiting class that looks good on paper, but I don't think it'll help their team win in 2019 because they've got a lot of tremendous defensive playmakers but not a whole lot of help for the offense. And really, from a standpoint of quarterback, and more help than they've got for the offensive line and what they'll need in order to elevate, and I don't know that they have that coming in right now.
I would agree with you, Trevor. I think this is a real concern. 2 years in a row with no quarterback. Clearly, they're going to have to go the grad transfer route or immediate transfer route because right now they're sitting there with James Blackman and not a lot of help.
It's going to be fascinating to watch. Again, Sam Howell decommitted for multiple reasons, but went to North Carolina, in-state kid out of Sun Valley High School in Indian Trail, North Carolina, decides Florida State not for him, heading to North Carolina. We'll see what Florida State does. As you said, may have to go transfer portal-wise to increase that depth there specifically at that position. Multiple positions going to be working out at the NFL Scouting Combine, 1 to 3 Eastern, March 2nd. That's a Saturday on ABC. We'll be there, Lucas Oil Stadium. Special coverage there, and if Deion Sanders was in that, he would still dominate. Our latest ESPN 30 for 30 film titled Deion's Double Play, available now on the ESPN app. Start your free trial today, downloading the app, visiting ESPNplus.com.
College Football Live is brought to you by Advil. You'll ask, what pain? With Advil.
We got another Australian punter. This one's a grown man. Lewis Headley signed on Wednesday, yesterday, because it was already Wednesday in Australia. Headed to the Canes.
By a couple of cheeseburgers, he can play left tackle for them.
My goodness.
Wow.
Committed to Miami in November. Didn't sign in the early signing period. There he is. Welcome. How about, Jeff Collins. Serving Waffle House at Bobby Dodd.
How about that? I tell you what, I'd go to a game there just to get the concession.
Well, you know, the guy that started Waffle House is a tech guy.
Yeah, but you get waffles, syrup, scrambled eggs instead of a hot dog, I'll take it.
Mother chunked.
Collins living at, Waffle House. By the way, the Lane Train bringing in, some legacy players. Sons of Terrell Owens and Warren Sapp Jr. are going to be preferred walk-ons there. Some Tariq Owens, Warren Sapp II, Sons of Pro Football Hall of Famers. Congrats to Kirk Herbstreit's twin sons, Jake and Ty, as well. Going to walk on there at Clemson. Mm-hmm. Big takeaway, Tom, today?
That recruiting means something. It's a big deal. We've shown the rankings. We've seen the teams that are dominant in their conferences, and they've recruited well. And they've recruited from the inside out. That's never changing.
Recruiting's the lifeblood of your program.
Yeah.
And to catch them, you've got to develop. Make your lower recruit into a better football player.
Absolutely.
That's how to catch them.
Dana Holgorsen going to join us on Thursday on ESPN2 College Football Live 4 Eastern. See you then.